heat in. Yeah. Maybe somebody can live there that kind of be responsible. At least to keep anyone breaking in or no one somewhere like it, not to keep it open. But we just, I should have gone with him if we could have gone today because we were, it was a holiday. He's a principal of high school, Adrian Klein. Hmm. And he and I are supposed to go together to see Robert Summerall, the president of the corporation. That's the Sunny South Packing Company I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. He's also here at the Morgan mm-hmm. Foundation. That money was set aside for a nonprofit local use of some type or another nonprofit.
We should explore that.
Yeah, we are. And it's better for us to do that and join in with the city or some other group and try to buy that railroad station down there for, they paid $65,000, maybe they want $75,000, but they want to control, they want to know what goes in there.
Who is they?
And the city. The city bought it to have it preserved, mm-hmm. you know, for something
historical,
local. They, in other words, they don't want it just to be used for anything. They want to have some restrictions on it, and that's okay. But it's a little too much for the Historical Society in its infancy. And too much more than we need, and we don't want to get involved with other organizations. We'd rather, if we can get an outright outright gift, a small, or just a house. It's a house, actually. Yeah. It's,
well, with the city
some
turned
of the walls
out.
Can be mm-hmm. broken down, and you can make a big section
sure.
of it.
Why won't the city turn that building over to you? Because they paid the money and they want it back?
Well, in the first place, I don't know that the Historical Society would want it because they'd have
too much
to probably require a lot of renovation
yeah.
that may entail more money than the $65,000 or $75,000 it would cost, because it's in pretty bad repair. And the hopes of getting rentals from Chamber of Commerce or other offices might not be so lucrative until at least you've got all that money invested in it. So we don't want to go in anything so heavy. We want to walk before, crawl before we walk.
Sure.
And we don't want to go in debt. We'd rather, if we can handle this house, we can handle the renovation of it to our satisfaction without going in debt, because we were afraid to go in debt because...
Yeah, you have to have funds.
It'd be usable. We can make it usable. We don't have to have anything extravagant. Huh? The main thing is just keep things dry and keep things locked up and have a place to meet that...
It's conducive.
That can be improved or can be sold later and buy something better or use something better. So this is just, that was my idea, but everybody went along with it. So when he and I can get together, we'll go down and see Robert and see him. The worst he can say is no. And there won't be no strings attached if we get it from them, because they're just interested in civic.
Yeah. Well, this kind of stuff, it's like this sort of stuff, there's never an argument when it's this kind of organization.
It's we don't have any enemies of what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And people can work with us at any degree, young and old, no restrictions on how much time they can put in or how little time. Even if they just give us their goodwill, we accept that. And then they go from that to any kind of involvement they want to. So they can pick, like I say, the subject or the material that they want to help donate or borrow or copy for us or let us copy. So I think that most everybody will have something of value to offer to us without having to beg for it, because it will be available for everybody.
Things will occur around it. You'll be surprised.
Yeah, I think the main thing is we just need to, like I told them, I said, now we've done all the talking. We've got organized. Now let's go to work. Let's do something.
Yeah.
And then we can tell people what we're doing. We can show people what we're doing. And then we can take pride in what we're doing. And then we will go from there.
That's right.
We've got laws, we've already passed laws, bylaws, you know, and we got those from the state or wherever the societies mm-hmm. are already previously
right.
organized. So we followed those
all
generally,
those things, that's right.
but we adjusted them, adapted them to our local.
That's what you always have to do. That's whatever your situation is, or whatever materials you want to have.
Election of officers and the directors are all intact and we're functioning. And we've got about 70 members now. We're holding the charter membership open until about the middle of March so that we'll get at least 100 before we close the charter membership. That always has a little prestige to it. So, and it's people that are definitely interested in what we're interested in, the historical recording of our 100 years, first 100 years, so we can.
Can
I may
do
be
that?
Getting over involved. I don't know. I just get excited over what that guy offered me. Back of what I'm ordinating him. Me now. I said, I know what I want to do, but I don't know if my wife okays it, but I know she'd go ahead with it. I insisted, but I hate to think I'm driving an old 78 car and buying $2,000 worth of historical photographs.
You can always follow up with her report to make another book.
It's all original stuff because he got everything from me. Stuff that nobody else has, too.
Well, now, when you say it's stuff that he's gotten from you, does that mean that you don't own that, or what is it? I don't quite understand what he's
got. Well,
going to
I've got a duplicate in prints of everything he's got, and I've got duplicates and negatives of a lot he's got. But he has some negatives and an awful lot of prints that I don't have because I've sold some of my prints.
Mm.
So I have to go back to him sometime for prints that I need. If I sold my last print, mm-hmm. I have to go back, you know, pay him. Like today, I got these four. I didn't get them for myself. I got them for somebody else. That $5 piece. I didn't pay taxes on that. But he sells them in groups.
Mm-hmm.
$2 half a piece, I can get those. But if I just get 1, 4, 5,
you had one picture of the family. Is that in the
place? See, some of the negatives are damaged, out, but what'd you say?
You had one made of Menelpies from Uncle Brady at Oncology.
Yeah, this is my family. I wasn't there. I had to work that day, but that's my wife and our oldest child. He's 45 now. He's doctor of education.
When was this taken?
19 Junior College. That was taken about 44 or 5 years ago. It looks like he might be 5 or 6 months old.
You look like you're happy.
Hmm?
You look like you're happy.
I guess I was.
That was our first one. He and his wife were over yesterday.
He's a professor at Manatee Junior College.
He's got his
right
doctor of education.
Manatee
has had for 10 years or better. And that's my mother and dad there.
We'll go that way too.
6. That's my oldest sister.
It's the great adventure.
Oh, let me see. That's a sister. That's a sister. That's a sister.
There are 12 children in his family.
That's a brother.
You believe that?
You know, Coy was the only brother there.
Was he?
And there were 7 brothers. Why in the world would he have been the only one?
Because he lived in Arcadia. That was just the one
and aunt. Just came down from Georgia. First time I think he ever came down to see us.
I can't believe the rest of the family didn't come from out of town then.
That was just the ones that lived in town, I guess. But mm-hmm. I was even working. I didn't even get off to
can't
him.
Believe that either.
But I see Mr. Moore came and took that picture in our backyard there. That's why we had a picnic out in the backyard.
What would he charge for a photo like that most times?
I had him $2 or $3 for coming and everything else. But then a doctor come to you, make a house.
Yeah.
You call for $2 too. But it's obviously be $1.
Mm. I'll pay $1 now.
Yeah, I bet you would.
Cost him more than $1, probably send you a bill.
More for the stamps on the envelope.
I think it cost $25 for Dale, didn't it? When he was a little.
Listen, I'm going to show you something.
Yes, sir.
Before you leave.
Can you believe that?
Him. The first article I wrote was soon after I bought this file for the Moore Studio, and this is the article I wrote about.
Howard, have you ever seen a book about talking about local history and about gathering local history and printing, getting yourself published in local history? I'm going to bring it tomorrow. Just
getting me printed in?
Well, I mean, yeah.
I've been a lot of write-ups. I'm a Herald, Tampa Tribune, Sarasota Paper, Arcade Paper. That's the photographer there. But I wrote the first article I had. When I wrote the article, I took it down to the editor, and we read it. He said, "Man, I can't believe this." He said, "Do you have any photographs of what you're writing about?" I said, "Yes, I got photographs." He said, "Well, bring me some. Help illustrate what you've written about." And I got these things out of the way.
How many articles do you think you've written?
I don't know, probably 40 or 50.
You have an A&P.
I had 15 down there recently that I took back and just dismantled them. And
dismantled what, sir? I'm sorry.
I put photographs back in one section and put the write-ups in another section.
I see what you're saying.
It's not it either. There's nothing. That's what I might have done, is put it on there. I've read in writing here, too, that all my material and the photographs are returned to me after one time use by a newspaper.
Arcadian. This is in June the 20th, 1984, and the title is "He Recorded DeSoto's History for Half a Century" by Howard Milton, guest writer. And it's about Charles A. Moore, who did a self-portrait with his own camera. It goes, "Without a doubt, Charles A. Moore recorded more of the history of Arcadia and DeSoto County in photography through 1950 than all of this combined. For almost 50 years, he was the only professional photographer in Arcadia. He recorded most of the beginnings, growth, and endings of the main events in Arcadia and DeSoto County. Moore was a man of small stature who had a slight bend in his back, a modest man remembered here by many 30 years after his death. His great achievement and contribution here was the visual art he left behind and the prints and negatives he processed. He developed and printed most of the films taken by individuals. Each weekday, he picked up and brought back the films to local drugstores where they were brought by the customer. He never kept a negative or print of any of those films. An order for processing a roll of films usually was less than a dollar. Most of the prints were the size of the negative, and that meant that they were small if they were size 127 or 630. If you wanted a larger size print than the negative, you paid extra. Everything was black and white in those days except for studio pictures, which could be hand-colored upon request at an additional $1. His store of recorded history of Arcadia and DeSoto County was the photo shots, was the studio shots, I beg your pardon. On special occasions, when he left the studio and went to the appointed place and time, it was his large camera that he could be seen with going where history was in the making. Who owns this camera?"
"Well, somebody bought it from the man that I bought the stuff from, and I didn't get to him in time. I was not in town at the time, so..."
"Do you know where it went?"
"I don't know if he knows..."
"Yeah, who the man was?"
"It was or not."
"Most of his shots were done in his studio, which was located above the Star Theater on DeSoto Avenue, where the Sun Bank is now located. It was in this studio that he caught the baby when only a few days old, the child on his or her second birthday, upon entering school at graduation time, when home on leave from service, with sweetheart or wife, with children and other special times. He captured the whole of life in his modest studio over those years and the lives of many here. Hundreds of homes, family albums, and school yearbooks are filled with his art with the eye of the camera. They'll remain a permanent part of everyone who was fortunate enough to possess a piece of his art. He captured whatever appeared before the shutter. In his files are records of Arcadia Street Railroad, pulled by a mule and driven by a Seminole Indian named Billy Bowlegs, the Methodist Men's Bible Class of 1913, Arcadia's first marshal, William Powell, the first National Bank building, the only building still standing uptown, not destroyed by the 1905 fire, Carlstrom Field before World War I, Oak Street before the above-mentioned fire, the old Methodist, Baptist, and Presbyterian churches, all the old county schools, Nocatee, Fort Ogden, Owens, Pine Level, Bunker, Brownville, as well as the city schools, West Elementary, DeSoto High, Old High School, Memorial Grammar, and Smith Brown. Then you will find all the buildings of the Florida Baptist Children's Home, including the superintendent's house, with children in front of each building, a panoramic view of the acres of the yard the children of the FBCH had to play in, and a pastoral view of the dairy cows, kids, and buildings in the background, dredging piece of rubber for phosphate, building Zeba King's home at the corner of Magnolia and Brevard, B-R-E-V-A-R-D, where Turner Realty now stands, several packing houses which employed hundreds, downtown during a patriotic parade before 1905, views of old general stores where you were served one item at a time by the clerk, going back and forth, many times wrapping each item and weighing it, grinding cane and cooking syrup, several inventions by local inventors such as Frank Klein in the hydraulic contraption to tighten crawlers on tractors, Louis Bishop and his tractor motor built in his shop, and Slim McAllies, that's spelled M small c capital A N L Y. Self-beater, which proved a contest between him and Fenton's beater, and Mr. Zimmerman's potato rake. Always need those potato rakes.
That was just a hand-out rake.
He also recorded on film such products as Gator Roach Hives by DeSoto Chemical Company, canned citrus products put on the market by the first DeSoto Canning Company, Thomas Gaskin's first cypress knees ready for market from his garage on Wooden Street, and Fort Ogden's Bank. Other subjects include DeSoto County Courthouse and Jail built in 1893 in the location of the present courthouse, the Chautauqua Theater, the Opera House, the Knee-High Bottling Company, the Post Office when it was in the Post Office Arcade Building, parentheses, Koch Building, end parentheses, and also the location of the Boston Store and the Post Office when it was located in the building recently vacated by the phone company, now the home of Gary Barrison's Construction Services or Service on Oak Street. The list goes on. Family reunions of the Mizells at Pine Level, St. Martin's family reunions, the Sullivans, the Wells, that's spelled W-E-L-L-E-S, the Forbes Cattle Men of the West, of the past, I beg your pardon, Parkers, Wells, Carltons, Wrights, Duncans, bankers such as Wells, and Knights, growers such as Sorrels, S-O-R-R-E-L, L.S., Wells, Morgans, Hollingsworth, and Smiths, early rodeo queens, Peggy Stonebreaker, Kathleen Kelly, Delilah Twist, and Emma, I think it's
Marie
Vance, Jimmy Dozer in nine poses as a baby, more when he attended DHS, and when he gave his sister Joan away in marriage. The weddings of many who have in recent years celebrated their 50th wedding anniversaries include Henry and Doris Lanier, Lanier, L-A-N-I-E-R, Harold and Dorothy Garner, and Earl and Ann Luke Carlton. Government officials photographed included the school board members, county commissioners, mayors, tax collectors, and assessors, city council members, and other politicians, old high school graduating classes of the 20s and 30s when the local high school didn't have high school annuals, dash, then Moore took all the pictures of the graduating seniors of the DHS annuals, dash, the cornucopia in 1938 and 1939. Most of the group pictures Moore took were printed from 8x10 negatives, which means he had an 8x10 camera. Do you remember the service stations when the gas pumps were filled, were fitted by hand pumps?
Filled by hand pumps.
God, I wish I could read. More photographed those stations where the attendant got his daily exercise by pumping the 10-gallon tanks at the top of the pump full before filling the car tanks by gravity. Gas was 17 cents per gallon then, and $1 was about all you could pay for or the car could hold. Those were the good old days when most people didn't have a car and 50 miles an hour was really flying. The list of shots Moore took goes on and on for such events as graduation, marriage, groups, reunions of classes, funerals, and other events and persons which might evoke a memory that brings a tear or a laugh and brings back sounds and smells of the past which have long been put aside and almost forgotten were not for a photograph in Moore's collection. You're absolutely right.
They have some of the pictures that followed that was used in that same article. Because when I took it down, the editor couldn't believe that I had access to all that. And for a long time, I didn't let anybody know that I bought it. I just wrote about him, and I let them use the pictures from the Moore file, Charles M. Moore file. See? So I guess it was 2 years before it was publicly known that I was in possession of all that. So people were wondering where I got all this material. And stuff. Well, I had purchased it.
Now, this general store, this wasn't, the feed store is what Gaskin's family had. Yeah, they had a seed feed store.
Right. Somebody told me at one of our meetings the other day who this man was, and I've got it listed in where I've got the real photograph. Mm-hmm. This was from the newspaper, so, but I've got the real negative photographs of these
events also.
And I've got the name of that man, but he's the only one I've been able to identify him in that picture.
Yeah, I heard that there was a general store south of town here. That's still going, or an old type store.
Down there in Fort Ogden, where you're going. That general store and the little antique store that's not hardly ever open, and a few houses, and there's quite a few houses, I guess, all the back streets of woods. And there's a couple or three churches in that school.
That was in the local paper, but I've got write-ups about me in color from Sarasota papers. I mean, Lakeland paper, they interviewed me, and written up about me. This is a picture of me when I was a teenager, still in high school. Yeah. I used to draw, mm-hmm. get a graduate draw for this paper when it went defunct. That's Mr. Moore and his family there.
So does the family still live around here?
His son still lives here. He married a local girl and he still lives. I've got several letters from him. Commended me about write up about his dad, using his dad's files. He said, you know, I didn't know for many years what happened to my dad's files. He said, I went into a studio in town here, and the only one in town I could figure was the man that had the file. And the man told him that he didn't know where the file was. He didn't know who had them. It couldn't have been Mr. Davenport, because Mr. Davenport bought them, not from Mr. Moore, but from the girl that worked for Mr. Moore, that bought Mr. Moore's out just before he died.
Maybe he went to see Charles.
That's just some other thing.
I know. Just going through.
Maybe he went to see Charles. Maybe.
Well, Charles was not downtown, though, see. When Charles came downtown, he went upstairs over the old opera building. Mm-hmm. And I think I was before then, and certainly before he moved into Schlossberg building downtown. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he was just delighted to find out that I was writing and using story and pictures of his dad.
But
so
he doesn't live here, does he?
Inserted in throughout these books. Huh?
He only has one son living, doesn't he?
Yeah, he had two sons.
In where, Conrad?
Yeah.
You asked if he had any children living here, didn't he? Or did you just
asked if he had any children.
Well,
no,
this,
I didn't
is,
ask.
This is Mr. Moore here.
Yes.
Now, Mr. Davenport bought a photographer's bench from the Morse studio that included it, along with other equipment, cameras, and so on. And there was a seat big enough for two of us. Velma and I had it taken, shot so, when we got married. And then when we had our 45th anniversary, we went down and had our picture taken on it then, the same bench.
Would you believe that seat had shrunk up?
But anyway,
a lot of water when they were cleaning it.
Mr. Davenport, I asked him, I said, do you have that old bench that Mr. Moore took so many thousands of pictures on? I mean, you know, and some many natives showed that same bench with the artwork on the back and the arms. And it was retractable. The arms
removable.
Would come off,
that's
the back
right.
would come off. You could make just a bench with no
right.
arms, or you could put one arm on it. You put it with two arms and no back, or with the back. And it was very versatile,
sure.
you know. And the negatives all showed the different uses. And I even wrote an article about the various use of a photographer's bench.
Sure.
You know, it's showing different photos.
They used to sell the parts.
And I asked Mr. Davenport one time after I bought my files, I said, look, is that old bench and Mr. Moore still there? He said, yeah, I've got it in the back torn up. He said, I thought I'd fix it up and remodel it and recanvas it. And so on. I said, well, go ahead and do it. And I'd like to buy it from you because since I've got his files, I'd like to have that. So he fixed it up, and I bought it from him, and some lady saw it, and she just had to have it because some of her family had their picture taken on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I could have sold it numbers of times, and more than I sold it for. But she left it in another studio, this Nicholson studio that's out at the shopping center now, who's been doing most of my photography work. He still takes pictures of it. He took our pictures. And I got a picture of her, but she's a little baby. She must not even be 6 months old. Where do you find myself? On the same bench.
Yeah.
And she's 60.
That's fine. He knows I'm getting old.
And even go back further than that. But this, Mr. Moore was a photographer in Vermont? Well, let me read this. Now then, here's a yarn that is something, sure enough, in the current issue of Good Housekeeping magazine, in this March of 1935, is a story by Mrs. Calvin Coolidge, illustrated with photographs of the former president, her late husband. One was taken when Coolidge was a young man, and it was taken by none other than our good friend and local citizen photographer, Charles A. Moore. That was about 40 years ago, so that would have been about 1895. Strange enough, proper credit was given the artist for the picture in the magazine, but the magazine carries the line photo by Moore. He was a good artist then, and is a good one now. Now, I intend to go to some library and find that Good Housekeeping. Hopefully, the picture, one of the pictures of Calvin Coolidge, who was before his president, because that would be 1895, he was just a young man then, will be on that old photo bench, and it would give that much more history to it, that much more value to it. But I've never ever done that yet. So he was a photographer in Vermont.
Before he ever came here?
As early as 1895.
That's pretty early, too.
Yeah.
Yes, seriously.
Yeah. So he goes way back. So in a way, this man has recorded more photos of the history of Sutter County than me. Now he bought out, I run this research through the newspaper, he bought out two other studios that were here when he came here in 1914. So he got the files from them, and they go back into 1880s and 90s. And a lot of those were no doubt the glass plates that were destroyed during the hurricane 1960. I think I mentioned that.
Yeah.
But he evidently reproduced a lot of them on regular negatives from those, because a lot of them were back in the days when they did have glass plates, you know. But I'm sure that a lot of stuff was lost.
Yeah, because of the hurricane.
Because all of them were reproduced.
What are the subjects, what are the themes of those early photos?
Phosphating on Peace River.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the businesses downtown. I've got
album here of early, early photographs that says,
Cowboys in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of
bone myself.
Bone myself, yeah. And he died in 1921. That's his speech, I guess.
Napoleon Bonaparte?
Yeah.
Myself?
Yeah.
Well, there's a Dorothy Myself from south of town.
She's related. It's the this thing is our family. I went to school with the girl that lives here. He was quite a cattle man. Here's an article in the paper when he sold 600 head of cattle.
I heard a story about him.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories about him.
I heard it.
I've heard it.
Oh, everyone?
Yeah. Yeah, they're probably not a one, I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you mine if you tell me something. I only know one. I heard that you was out hunting with a local guy, local boy, this good old boy, this local man, never been outside of the town area, and then a Yankee. And then in the course of the hunt, the Yankee died. And they had to bury him out in the, you know, on the prairie there because they just couldn't bring the body back and they were too far out. So he gets back to town, he writes a letter up north, and they send the money down so that when the springtime comes, they go out there, dig him up, and send him back up north. So he told him fine, and he and his friend would do that, he promised. Well, in the interim, what happened was his friend died, and he'd never been anywhere. So this money was to set up to send the Yankee back up north on the train. So I guess his nickname was Bone. So Bone Mizell says, well, hell, he liked his friend better, and he did this Yankee. The Yankee was buried, and it'd be hard to get him out of there and all that mess and trouble. So he put his friend inside the thing and sent him up because he'd never been on a train ride before.
Mm-hmm.
So he should die and have a train ride and see something different.
That has been reported so many times. There's articles about him when he went to Hot Springs, Arkansas. He was evidently about to have a nervous breakdown. Some of the cattlemen took him out there. And then while he was out there, he went insane. Then they took him to the mental institution at Chattahoochee, and he stayed up there for quite a while, and then he came on back home. I never had heard that story about Bob Mizell going being insane before, but his health broke, and he was taken out by some of his friends out to Arkansas, Hot Springs, Arkansas, to recover. And before they got him back, he'd gone insane.
Might have been they, bad liquor.
They took him to
moonshine
to the Chattahoochee Hospital, State Hospital, and but he got better and then he got out. But he went to the penitentiary one time at Rayford for stealing cattle, but he didn't serve but one day, or he didn't even serve a whole day and night. But the governor or the head officer of the state had to commit him because he was found guilty by the court, but he was petitioned by so many people and his character was vouched for by so many people that they didn't ever make him serve any time. And he came back with the same people took him up there.
Didn't he say that he'd been stealing cows for
people
all his life?
And they caught him stealing a cow from somebody, and the judge is about to send a piece of judge. He said, I've been stealing cattle for the Parker brothers or the King brothers or whoever he's working for all these years, and nobody's ever said a thing about it. Now when I steal one cattle myself, well, you want to put me in the jail? And I don't think they put him in jail for that either. But he had a lisp to his voice, and I mean to his speaking, and he was, but he's quick-witted. Nobody could ever overcome his judgment. He was bad to drink. He was asked by a judge how long it had been since his last drunk. A month, he replied. When the judge asked him what a month was, M-O-M-P-H, was the Mizell shot back, hang hit, Judge. I thought everybody knew what a mump was. It's 30 days. He was the top cap hunter for Zyde King, who was a big merchant here in the, Fort Ogden, a sawmill man, cattle man, and his grandchildren are still around today, some of them are. Highly respectable. He had
Ziba?
A large
Ziba?
Ziba King.
Z-I-B-A.
Yeah.
Ziba King.
And Mazel was supposed to keep his books, but he always kept them in his head. He never wrote anything down. To pay off cowboys working for him, he withdrew funds from an Arcata bank with a blank check signed by Ziba King, which the teller filled in. After he was found dead in the Fort Ogden Railway Depot on July the 14th, 1921, a physician listed the cause of death on a death certificate as moonshine. That's the cause of death. Went to sleep and did not wake up. That was reported in the Miami Herald.
If this guy was so colorful, the ballad of Bone Mizell.
Yeah, there's a about Bone Mizell. It's in the Cowboy Hall of Fame in Kansas, in
Oklahoma City. A cracker cowboy.
This, I drew this too. This is just a copy. I sold the original. His tombstone is right out there at the cemetery where Velma's family is buried. And his saddle is on my lake of Jake Avant, just west of town here. Bone left his horse and saddle with Mr. Avant, Les Avant, Sr. And Aunt Les took him to the depot in Fort Ogden. And that's where he died, in the railroad depot.
But he was in True West, too?
Yeah.
1975, October. Bone Mizell, Remington's Cracker Cowboy.
Cowpoke,
that's right.
He was about average size, 5'8". He always talked with a lisp and ended each breath with a wheeze through the nostrils. He will always be remembered by his hawk-like nose and protruding chin. He was a great practical joker and was a great friend to the people. There are a great many stories about Bone, but here are some of the best. One was about the one I just said about what a mump was.
Yeah.
And then this is a good one too. One day Bone got drunk and was lying in the gutter when two men came by, and one asked, "Who is that lying in the gutter like that?" "Well, that's old Israel," replied the other. Bone, who knew his scripture, woke up about this time and said, "I ain't Israel, I ain't Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob, but I'm Saul, the son of Kish, who went out seeking his father's asses, and I have found two."
That's good, man.
And
you're
then
sharp.
This is about Joan and his Bone and his friend John. That about his friend died and his Yankee died, and the Yankee was buried, he was instructed by the family, or paid by the family, to dig him up and
send him back.
Send him back. Yeah, right.
Yeah, they just jokes around here, you know. And was it him that said that somebody asked him something and he answered him one way, and then somebody else asked him and he answered another way? He told them a different story. And he said, they said, they reminded him that he told it another way.
I got an extra copy of that.
And he said, "Well, I was just talking that time, but now I'm swearing."
Now this is the picture by Remington that Bone was out with him in 1895. And there's just some more of Florida Arcata Cowboys in 18.
Did anyone ever write a book about him? I mean, was he famous enough?
You know, that's another thing. We haven't had books written about any individual in Arcata, but they have been in different history books about Florida.
Yeah, separate
but only
sections.
As an individual, and not enough real material to write a whole book about it.
Well, there may not be enough, but I don't know. See, that's why I'm asking.
No.
Isn't there something about him in that book up there?
Okay. Yeah, I've got it in here. I've recopied it in here where I could have
that green book, I mean that. about Florida.
Yeah, some of the stuff is interesting because I ran across a gunfight in Tarpon Springs, Florida, before it was called Tarpon Springs. So there's a lot of cowboy stuff here that, or cowmen stuff that you never hear about elsewhere.
You have to respect a man like Bonezell who brands a cow with his teeth. It was a hot day in 1892 as Bonezell and two cowpoke companions rode the brush flats in Soda County in search of stray cattle. They spotted a tawny bag of bones with murderous horns, but no brand. Urged by his friend, Bone was determined to rope the tough old cow, put his mark on his ears. Spurring his horse, Bone took out after the cow, and then in an instant his rope snaked through the air to settle around the horns of the sullen brute, who were snorting and blowing beside a thick clump of scrub oaks. Bone dismounted and went hand over hand along the ropes and threw her down. But as he reached for his sharp jackknife to mark her, the cow sensed that only one hand was holding her. She began lurching and Bone's knife went sailing through the air. Seconds later, the cow sent him cartwheeling into the scrub. For the next several minutes, the air was filled with a mixture of Mazelle's blue haze of profanity and the wild longhorn's loud bawling. Man and cow battled for the upper hand. Finally, the commotion ended, and Bone stumbled out of the brush, his face skinned, his hair tangled, and his whiskers dripping blood. His companion began to laugh. "Go on and laugh," he said, "but I marked her like I said I would." "You're lying, Bone," the cowpoke said. "We seen you lose your knife when she threw you in the scrub." "I didn't need a knife," Bone said. "I marked her with my teeth." Mm. Driven from the scrub, the painfully surprised cow displayed two bleeding ears, bearing the daredevil's cowboy's registered mark. They were chewed into her ears almost as neatly as if you'd cut them with a knife.
How many notebooks or articles of this guy's life have you got? This in here, or another one, or?
No, I just...
Stop collecting after a while?
I've got, in my postcard album, I've got a copy of this.
I see.
But most of the stuff I got on here is right here. But he's from a
local
pioneer family.
Mm-hmm.
The Bone legends have taken on a life of their own, but some details of the illustrious cowpoke's life are in dispute among his surviving relatives.
Yeah, I was going to say if anybody had interviewed the relatives about this. I mean, I talked to Dorothy about pine needle baskets, but never about...
This Russell Mazzella, nephew of Bone Mazzella, used to keep Bone's death certificate in a worn manila envelope and cited its word with funerary precision. Russell claimed that Bone's first name was Morgan and the birth date should have been 1863. He grumbled about burying fictitious people. Second cousin Tommy Mazzell, 87, who still ranches at Pine Level, I remember Tom Mazzell, shows you an old newspaper clipping describing Morgan N. Mazzell as a justice of the peace in Orange County from 1863 to 1865. Morgan was Bone's father. Bone always went by the name Napoleon Bonaparte Mazzell. I don't know about the birth date he has. I wasn't there then. What about the variation in spelling the family's last name? "That's simple," Tommy explains. "We're descendants from French Huguenots who used the final E. My wife still does, but I just got tired of writing it, so I quit." Bone probably didn't have enough schooling to spell the name either way, but he wasn't dumb. Once on a cattle drive, the time came to make camp, and Bone decided to escape the drudgery of suppertime chores. He volunteered to fetch water from a nearby gator hole, he knew. Off he went to return only when dinner was practically cooked. "What took you so long?" the other cowhands inquired in an accusatory tone. "Boys, I'm telling you something," Bone exclaimed. "I just saw the dangest cat fight I ever saw in my life. On the edge of that pond, two old bobcats were fighting and growling at each other. All at once, they stood up facing each other like two men. Then, like a streak of lightning, they clinched and began to climb one another. And you know what, boys? I stood right there and watched them climb clear out of sight. On the return trip, the men camped at the same place, and Bone once again went off to the gator hole for water. When he came back, the cowboys asked him, "Bone, did you see anything of your bobcats this time?" "No, boys," he replied, "but I guess they're still a fighting as the fur is still a falling." The monument at Zolfo Springs commemorates the cowboys' importance to Florida folklore as a symbol of the state's frontier period. Getting that monument dedicated involved a piece of political bedevilment, which must surely have had old Bone chuckling in his grave. The first arrangements were made several years ago with a high state official slated as the principal speaker. This choice was considered a plum at the time, but the plum turned sour after the man resigned and charges that state employees had been working on his farm. As the date of the ceremony approached, officials of the Peace River Valley Historical Society hoped that the invited speaker would send regrets and bow out gracefully. He didn't. Some of the valley residents clamored for him to be disinvited, and Russell Mazzell threatened court action to stop the event on grounds of complete aggravation. That's quote, complete aggravation. Mazzell contended that the dedication was merely an excuse to get 4,000 or 5,000 people together for someone, so someone can make a speech. You can't have an election without getting a crowd together, and this was a way to do it. I felt like Uncle Bone was being used. Finally, the society extricated itself from the conflict by canceling the entire fair. It was held almost a year later with a less controversial speaker.
So he died in 1921, huh?
Mm-hmm.
There seems to have been a lot written about him.
Yeah. One day Bone was butchering a cow when its owner rode up. The man swore out a warrant. Bone was in real trouble. The judge asked him if he had anything to say. "I sure do, Your Honor," Bone declared. "I must have stole 10,000 cows from them. I worked for and everybody laughed at that. But now I go and steal one little old speckled calf for myself, and you want to send me to the pen." The judge sentenced Bone to a year in Rayford. His friend arranged a pardon, but then discovered it could not be effective until Bone actually served some time in the penitentiary. He received a hero's send-off as he boarded the train in Arcadia. At Rayford Prison, officials gave him a tour and a good dinner. He made a speech praising the management, received the pardon which was waiting for him, and having served his time, quote, unquote, boarded a train for home. Bone was also in court quite often on charges arising from his affinity for Jamaica ginger, an inexpensive but potent and alcoholic brew which generally affected the speech. That's when he said, no. Once after a bar room brawl, a judge asked him, "Bone, what do you think I should do with you, your case?" "Judge," he asked, "I thinks you should nolly cross it." Nolly cross it. Mm. That was a legal term. Another time Bone solemnly assured the judge that he hadn't imbibed a drop in a mump. That's when the judge asked him what was a mump. He said 48. He thought everybody knew what a mump was. 48. Oh yeah. On one occasion, Bone actually appeared in court without having a defendant. He was a witness in a hog theft case, but on taking the witness stand, he changed his story. "When we talked before the irate, the prosecutor reminded him, you said the hog belonged to the man who is bringing charges." "I was just talking then," Bone insisted. "Now I'm swearing." Court system wasn't the only social structure to endure Bone's cavalier manner. He approached spiritual matters with a mixture of irreverence and tolerance. Ms. Zula Williams of Arcadia, who proudly admits to being one of Bone's kinfolks, tells of a Sunday when he came to church at Pine Level, the former seat of Manatee County. "After the services, we were having a picnic dinner outdoors on the grounds," he recalls. "That's probably why Bone was there. He was drunk and couldn't keep his mind off the dinner. When we all stood to sing a hymn, Bone held up his book but sang, 'Chicken pie, chicken pie, oh no.' After the last verse, everyone else stopped. Bone just kept right on singing Chicken Pie.
I heard that one.
Then there's the time Bone arranged for one of the fellow crackers to serve as guest of honor at a Yankee funeral. An undertaker hired Bone to dig up the remains of a young Vermont adventurer who had died while camping in the Everglades during the dry season. A man's companion decided they couldn't haul the body out by flatboat across dry creek bed, so they buried their friend in a remote cemetery near Mohaven. The Vermonters' wealthy family contracted with the undertaker to ship their son's remains home for proper interment in the family plot. When the rains came, the undertaker paid Bone to retrieve the body. Shucks, I got to thinking, Bone said years later. Here was this Yankee who had been all over the world and seen everything, and right next to him lay poor old Bill Red, who had never traveled none and always wanted to take a train.
The Ballad of Bone Myself.
And then he dug up Bill Red and had him shipped to Vermont. And I guess the parents never knew the difference because evidently they didn't open the casket.
Yeah.
They have an annual reunion.
Myself family?
At Pine Level every year. This is the remodeled home of, not Bone Mazel, but some cousin of his. That had a large family out there. That some of the family still lives out there. One of the granddaughters I want to screw with. Amex Phosphate Company bought thousands of acres out there, which included some of the Mazel land. And they restored this back to its original. And they paid for this reunion the first year if they remodeled it. But they normally have it in a park there, where the old courthouse was across from the old Methodist church. And then they have the meal, I think, at the Methodist church. They've got a nice...
Where is that?
Now there's the Ballad of Bone Mazel. And that's the one that's in the Campbell Hall of Fame at Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's the Millard Fillmore Mazel that's
mentioned here.
Home here, yeah. I don't remember him, but I remember he was... son and second wife. This is one of the earlier, this was taken in the 20s of Millard Fillmore Mazel's family. That's M.F. Mazel, and that's his second wife. That's his daughter by his first wife, and this is his daughter by his second wife. I knew that. This is Dr. D.W. Nowlin, pastor of the Baptist Church then. That was taken sometime in the late 20s. She was about 8 or 9 years old, about my age, so that would be about late 20s, early. And that's Tom Mazel. That's the son of, that's his mother-in-law, not my stepmother. That's the one that was quoted back there. Further. This is another picture of another Fillmore Mazel and his wife. And probably taken about the same time as that other picture back there, because this girl that I went to school with is about the same age. I know some of these people, I don't know them all. I've looked at them. This is another from Fillmore Mazel and his son, Tom Mazel, and his daughter. The older daughter, Bill Harrison.
That's
about 4 generations. Yeah.
How's Millard related to Bone?
Well, I think he's a cousin, but see, Bone goes back earlier than he does, probably a generation, so he might have been second cousin. I'm not sure.
Millard's dead.
Did
Millard been dead a long time?
You mean the old man, Millard Fillmore, was that?
Yeah.
Not his grandson, not Tom's boy.
Yeah,
no,
but
he's still
grandson,
he's got a grandson. No, it's a boy. Yeah, that's Tom's boy. His name now, Paul Miller too. That's Tom. Yeah. That's his second one. He married twice. The first time he married this woman's brother-in-law, isn't it, a brother?
Yeah.
We was talking about
Emily Blitzen. I know, I tried to remember that the other
day. Just more about the Mazzells. They were early cattle people here.
I was trying to figure out Miss Harrison and Miss Littleton.
There's Emery and Ida Mazzell. That's some of the same relative, just Mazzell.
Some of those are at Fort Ogden, aren't they?
Well,
Mazzell?
Mazzell,
yeah, that? Sure, this lady I talked to.
Isn't Ida Mazzell the one that used to work
at
Shelton County?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't she
live
at Fort Ogden?
Mm-hmm.
He's got a good
answer. Was Dorothy Mazzell the one that still lives down there?
Yeah,
Fort
sure.
Ogden, yeah.
Was she one of Mazzell's
daughters?
Or she married a Mazzell?
She married a Mazzell. Dorothy is the widow of Everett or Floyd.
Floyd, I think.
Floyd? Okay.
Floyd?
There's Everett there. That's right. That's Everett. Everett and Floyd were brothers.
Hmm.
Everett and Floyd is out from an old-time cattle family and run up in Pine Level, went in for citron cattle at Fort Winder. That's where they are now. With all the handicaps of the late 1800s that survived, became prosperous. Both industries. Floyd told me of hauling oranges by ox cart to the wharf at Bogus Landing for shipment to northern ports. They used to have a phosphate mine there at Bogus Landing. There's some of the remains over there now. Thomas Dale first settled in the Peace River Valley at Pine Level in the very early days of the county, and they've been a grower of farm products, citrus, and cattle for many years. Recently, the Mazzells sold their large holdings of land to the phosphate people.
Yeah.
I'll tell you about that.
Hmm. Yeah.
Here's, it said other Mazzells prominent in the early days of Sword County, Enoch Everett, born in 1806, George C. Boyd in 1846, Millard Fillmore, that's the one that his home has been renovated. Joshua, born in 1860, Morgan Mazzell, half brother of Enoch. Now, Morgan evidently is Bone Mazzell's daddy. Half-brother Enoch Everett, born 1820, and Morgan's two sons, Jesse
Bolivar
and
Bonaparte,
yeah.
Whom everybody knew.
Capital
letters, Bonaparte is Bone.
Yeah, right. The Mazzells came to Pine Level in 1860. That was when
Pine Level was the capital of Manatee County. Yeah.
And prior to that, Arcadia, DeSoto County, and Manatee County were part of Hillsborough County.
Mm-hmm.
So we came off of Hillsborough County, then we came off of Manatee County, and then DeSoto County was five counties until 1921. The territory included Highlands County, Glades County, Hardy County, Charlotte County, and DeSoto County until 1921. Then each of those became separate counties.
So first was Hillsborough. Then it became Hillsborough, Manatee, and DeSoto?
Yeah, but DeSoto twice. Because, see, when we broke off from Manatee County,
mm-hmm.
we became the territory of five counties that were to be formed in 1921.
Mm-hmm.
But we broke away from Manatee County in 1890-something, I think it was something like that. Pine Level was both the capital, or the county seat of Manatee County, and a year or so after that of DeSoto County. But about 1893 or two, the county seat was moved to Arcadia, and that's when they took a vote, and Arcadia won out over Zoffo by one vote, I believe it was.
Hmm.
Well,
sure got a lot, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Is the saddle still owned by...
Yeah, it's still out there. I talked to him. That's right. I found out. He told me that he had it. The son has it now.
What's
that? I talked to someone about the museum about it. They said they'd like to have it and when we have a place to put it. And I think we can get it. But I think we just don't need to collect anything unless stuff like this until we've got a permanent
housing
for it.
That's right. Yeah, that's the best way to do it. Otherwise, it'll disappear.
Because I've had people to offer stuff to me for the historical side, but I don't really want to be responsible for it till we get a place. The president and I have already got the okay from the membership to contact this Morgan Foundation to buy this house there just north of the post office for sale for about $30,000.